We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Today, Michael and I are joined by another special guest. This time it is Brad Doolittle, who writes for the Basketball Prospectus. You'll sometimes see his articles on ESPN.com as an insider article as well. Over the summer, he's posted several articles referencing the Hornets and projections for the coming year and various free agents. And we wanted to get his take on Hornets players and get a little bit more information about what advanced statistics seem to be telling us about these players. So thanks very much for coming on, Brad.
My pleasure, guys.
So one of the first things I want to bring up is when the Hornets signed Lopez, there was probably more excitement on our site than when they signed Ryan Anderson away from the Orlando Magic. We've tried on this podcast a couple of times to get people excited for Ryan Anderson, but he has been behind Dwight Howard and the Dwight Howard drama. One of your posts really talks about Ryan Anderson as one of the best free agents that was available out there this year. So how about we talk about that for a little bit?
Well, read our annual preseason annual that we put out, the Pro Basketball Prospectus book. You'll know that that we always list a table with the player's most recent set of advanced metrics along with his individual projection for the coming season. And that in the book is generated by Kevin Pelton's Shaney projection system. And it also lists the players that are most comparable to that player. And we're not really releasing all of the specifics on Shaney yet, but I can tell you that right now the number one comparable for Ryan Anderson is Dirk Nowitzki. And that means that he is more than just a standstill spot-up shooter. Ryan Anderson is very good at not just knocking down a high percentage from behind the three-point line, but also leveraging that ability to put the ball on the floor, and he has a foul-drawing rate that is much higher than your typical shooting specialist. And on top of that, he is not your kind of stretch four like, you know, maybe a Steve Novak that is useless on the defensive end. He's not a great individual defender, but he's a decent team defender, and he's an outstanding defensive rebounder. And that means he brings all sorts of things to the table. He doesn't have the sort of ball handling ability of you know, the kind of guy that you can just give the ball to and clear out and expect him to create his own shot. He does have to work off of other people. But in terms of players that fall under that umbrella, he's as good as there is in the NBA, and I think his acquisition by the Hornets is the single most underrated transaction of the entire offseason.
Yeah, and the article Ryan was referencing, you actually had him listed at the number one free agent as far as estimated PER ahead of everybody's consensus number one, Deron Williams. But there was a line in there that scares Hornets fans, and it's, you know, the one that critics of this move and the Hornets giving him nearly $9 million a year seem to continuously point out. You said, unfortunately, his performance lagged after Dwight Howard was injured. You know, what do you expect? I mean, how big of an impact was Dwight Howard on creating that space for Anderson? And, you know, without somebody that dominant down low, I guess, give us the range of how far you could see his PER and just overall performance dipping.
Well, I think obviously it was tied with having Howard on the floor. I also think that to a certain extent, you know, he was one of the breakout players in the league in the first part of last year. And I think maybe Orlando and Stan Van Gundy asked him to assume a certain role that he's not suited for once Howard got hurt. You know, there's sort of a middle ground. I mean, I put that in there as sort of a red flag or warning sign to say, you know, the advanced metrics, PER or the WARP, wins above replacement metric that we use. Last year, they marked Ryan Anderson as one of the top 10 players in the league. I don't know that I actually believe he's a top 10 player, but I do believe that he is, you know, at his peak, a potential maybe third team, say, NBA All-Star kind of a guy. I guess it's not surprising that his numbers would dip without Howard, but I don't think that necessarily means that he has to have a dominant post presence to create space. I just think it means that you have to run sets for him to utilize his strengths. And we'll have to see how the Hornets develop. You know, I don't think anybody's looking at Anthony Davis as being a dominant low block kind of a scorer right out of the gate. And Robin Lopez is I think, a very good underrated player, but he's also not an upper tier low post scorer. So it'll be interesting to see how it works. But he's also, I think, so versatile that since the Hornets have the big guys in place, not only can you swing him between the three and the four, if you playing in a configuration that allows them to play small forward because the other team maybe just has, say, they use the three to just stand in the corner, then that gives him the ability to work on a low block, and he's very versatile for a guy with a reputation as a strict standstill shooter. And I think it's one of Monty Williams' biggest challenges this year is to figure out how to get the most out of him and figure out how that big man rotation is going to work for the Hornets.
As much as we're talking about Ryan Anderson, you know, you're also trying to project rookies coming into the league. I guess before we talk about Anthony Davis or even maybe a little later Austin Rivers, how does any of the systems, be it the NBA PET system that you use, the Schoen system that you were referring to earlier, how do you go about trying to project a rookie's impact in their first year in the league?
Well, first of all, it's Kevin's system is pronounced Shaney. And it's named after the former NBA player Russ Shaney, who played for Kevin's beloved Seattle Supersonics. And Kevin still sees him around Seattle from time to time, so I would hate to have the mispronunciation out there.
I had no idea how to say that.
Everybody's Googling Russ Shaney as you speak, but go ahead.
Kevin's system is based on a database of comparables. In other words, he has a set of criteria in which he says this player has these traits that are similar to all of these players from the past, and it calculates a score for each similar player for how similar they are And then the projection is based on sort of an average of all of those similar players with, you know, the more similar they are, the more weight that, you know, is given in the average. And so he has translated that to the college level by just looking at how certain kind of players transition from one player to the another. Kevin's system is the best projection system that exists for basketball, and that's why we use it in the book. My system is more NBA PET, which stands for projection, evaluation, and tracking. Is more of my goal is more to project team performance than individual player performance. So I'll take more of a safe route for projecting individual players. I'll use aging patterns that are almost like actuarial tables, where I say most guys will retain this amount of their performance from this age to this age, and I alter that according to the various athletic indicators, because the theory behind it is, if a guy has no significant injuries and he's not at a certain age, then he should pretty much develop along a normal curve, and that's what NBA PET is developed by. And the way that works as far as translating a guy from college to the pros is, I've looked at the past and saw how guys who have athletic scores at the collegiate level that are adjusted for caliber competition and all of that thing, how much of those guys' college production do they retain once they hit the NBA? And those are the kind of filters that were assessed to Anthony Davis. And, whether it's Hollinger or me or Kevin, he's scored off the charts in all of those translations. The fact that he only played 1 year of college and scored that high is very exciting for Hornets fans.
Yeah, and just so everybody gets an idea of how high he scored on most of your ratings. So the last time the Hornets had a significant rookie, it was Chris Paul. And, of course, Hollinger, for like a couple of years, wrote about how Chris Paul was setting records as the most amazing, rookie guard, not just point guard, but one of the most amazing rookie guards in the last 30 years. So if you look at the two scores between Chris Paul and what Anthony Davis is projected to get, it's like a point apart, I think it was. Like, one was 21 and one's a 22.
Yeah.
Which essentially means we should expect a mega superstar, which I mean, Michael's been on board with Anthony Davis for a year and a half. I don't even have words to express how impressive that would be and how lucky the Hornets would be to end up with Chris Paul and then Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis ends up being that good.
Well, absolutely. It's amazing not just that he scores that high after 1 year of college. He's 3 years removed from being a 6'2" guard.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he's not going to put up the obvious sort of offensive statistics that Chris Paul did. And I think because of the way Monty Williams prefers to play, that I think his defensive impact will be apparent and people will appreciate it. But I don't necessarily know that in traditional statistics that he's going to like jump out at people, especially right out of the gate. But I do think that his defensive impact is going to be apparent from the first game of the season, and it's going to get people really excited.
Yeah, so I guess let's talk about this season. You actually had a very optimistic projection for the Hornets 4 years from now, but we're trying to stay in the present. So you had an article up kind of talking about how your systems projected Minnesota and New Orleans being good in the future, but they could actually be pretty good now. You talk about, the Hornets roster and have a front court of Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, and Robin Lopez. I'm just wondering, because again, this is a little out of position for Anderson and a little big and immobile in this seemingly new age of basketball where it's more about athleticism and you have a lot of undersized guys playing positions. Is this the most effective lineup according to the numbers And if so, I guess I'm wondering, you know, if the Hornets just had an average small forward as opposed to Al-Farouq Aminu, do you see Anderson and Davis as more of a power forward center combo? And I guess is Anderson just forced to play the small forward in your projection because the Hornets are so deficient at small forward?
Yeah, I do see the majority of the time that those guys are on the court together it being a five and a four configuration. And like I said, it's only going to be against certain opponents and certain lineups where Anderson will be effective as a three. I'm a guy that feels like you need to find as many combinations that allow you to get your best players on the court at one time as you can find. But Anderson's never going to be a prototypical three. He's never going to be able to guard LeBron James or Carmelo Anthony. But against, say, Utah, where Marvin Williams stands in the corner and, you know, you either stand there with him or you sag off of him, you know, Anderson can play three for all of those minutes. And every opponent has those stretches where you can get away with playing that big lineup. But I do think mostly it's going to be like a three-man rotation, depending on what's called for in any given stretch, where Davis, Anderson, and Lopez are going to, you know, basically be kind of, well, not interchangeable, but I think you're going to see Davis slide back and forth between the four and the five, and then Anderson filling in the minutes, depending on where that goes. But it's still going to work out to where I would expect, well, obviously Gordon and Davis are probably going to be the two highest minutes players on the team. And even if Anderson ends up not being a starter, if they don't want to roll him out as a, you know, as a, the starting three to begin games, I still anticipate him getting probably 30 minutes a game. And given the level of his production and efficiency, he's still going to be extremely valuable. As a matter of fact, if that turns out to be the case, he plays 30 minutes a game as the Hornets' first guy off the bench, that's your favorite for sixth man of the year.
Yeah.
So there is one other spot. I mean, Michael mentioned Al-Farouq Aminu, but how kind are your projections to the Hornets' point guard situation? I know Grievous Vasquez and, of course, Austin Rivers fit into those. From what I understand, it doesn't particularly care for Rivers, but does Vasquez make up for it, or is he just as deficient?
Vasquez projects as a guy that would be a quality backup point guard.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what he is. The Hornets aren't going for a championship this year, obviously. And even a playoff run would be quite a feat for them. But because the expectations are going to be improved, but still reasonable, it's going to give them a chance to play with that Gordon Rivers backcourt, see how it works out. Watching Rivers in the summer league, a lot's got to change for that to work out where Rivers is running the offense. But, you know, stranger things have happened. Ironically, one of his most comparable players, according to the Shaney system, is Lance Stephenson. And Indiana's been trying to do the same thing with him ever since he came out of Cincinnati, which is take a guy who's always sort of played off the ball and is a big-time scorer, not necessarily creating plays for other players, and then trying to develop in that role. I think Rivers is very much in the sort of stage that Stephenson was when he came out of college as far as learning how to run an offense. But it's worth a shot. I mean, he's got a lot of ability, and if it doesn't work out, I guess if there's a trade chip, he could also be a valuable bench scorer. You know, I don't know. Rivers did not do well statistically at Duke last year, and his translations are god awful. And so if he gets the minutes of a full time player, his warp projects to be one of the worst in the NBA. So If you're looking for the bellwether player as far as whether the Hornets are really going to exceed expectations this year, Rivers is the guy you're looking at. And I can also tell you that the Hornets last year finished 10th in the league as far as assist percentage, assist per field goals made, which shows that Williams, like San Antonio, I always compare the Hornets to the Spurs because of him. They favor ball movement, ball sharing, and that kind of an offense. With the guard configuration that it looks like they're going to have, they project to have the second worst assist rate in the league this year. That's not necessarily a death knell for an offense. The Thunder were the worst team in the league as far as assist rate last year. It's just a different kind of offense. But if you do want an offense that is built around ball sharing and ball movement, and you still project that low, it's a concern. But, you know, the Hornets basically hit the reset button once they traded Chris Paul. You can't expect to have the entire new system in place 1 year later. What they've done has been amazing. So if the Rivers experiment doesn't show big dividends this year, well, that's the number one priority, is to get a playmaking point guard after this year.
Right.
And
so
as you can tell by Ryan's cackle, he has been anti-Rivers from the start. I actually projected him as the number 10 pick the day the lotto balls were chosen. So I've been on the Rivers bandwagon. But I will say to Ryan that Harrison Barnes, according to these projections, also projects to be one of the worst players in the league, somebody that both of us love. So
yeah, he does. But I'll add to that. It's unfair to refer to those projections and call the guys the worst in the league, because warp is a combination of efficiency but also playing time. And if you're really, really bad, you're not going to get enough playing time to accumulate a horrific type of a warp. And those guys, their numbers project so poorly because they do project to be very inefficient in their first years in the league, but they also project to play a lot. And so the end result is they have among the lowest warps of anybody in the league. So I call it worse. That's sort of hyperbole, but, you know, take that for what it is.
There's always Eddie Curry.
Number 500 in the ESPN top 500 ranking.
I don't disagree with it either. Although I guess some of the more anonymous guys above him may have less talent, but, you know, weighing a quarter of him probably helps them out a little bit.
And they also don't have a championship ring like Eddie Curry currently has.
Yeah, he does. I forgot he can do that now. He can actually claim to have a championship ring. Wow.
And
it shows that we live in a total godless, indifferent universe.
So I guess I'm wondering, you've kind of referred to it a couple of times in this podcast already about Monty Williams' style of play. And, you know, all indications coming out of Hornets camp with, you know, their new roster, kind of the new additions to this team, is that they're hoping to greatly accelerate their pace. Now, this is a rhetoric that every team says this time of year. They're going to play faster, they're going to run more. But I guess I'm wondering, you know, if that's the case, and if a team dramatically improves or increases their pace from year to year, how much does that, you know, throw these possible projection systems off? And is there any way, you know, maybe somebody like Austin Rivers, who he himself said wasn't allowed to really run at Duke, and that's where, you know, his game really benefits, is in transition. You know, if it's possible that we could see some skewing of the numbers if the Hornets are able to truly get their pace up.
Well, theoretically, you can't really do much about teams that change their pace when you're doing projections. The projections are built off of a per-possession basis, so from that standpoint, it's irrelevant how fast a team plays or doesn't play. It's all about how many points they score each time down the floor and how many points they give up each time down the floor. But, you know, I read those comments as well. And, you know, and I'm in Chicago, and I've been covering Tom Thibodeau for over 2 years now. And the Bulls aren't the slowest paced team in the league. But, you know, his favorite mantra is, you know, we have to play with pace. You know, we have to get down the floor and get easy shots. And he, you know, he talks like he's Doug Moe from 1985. But that's not how the Bulls play. So, you know, there's always a lot of things you hear in the preseason, you know, and you just said that, and they don't pan out. From a projection standpoint, we can't project the Hornets to all of a sudden play fast because Monty Williams says that they will. They had the slowest pace factor in the league last year, and our projections have them repeating that. And the projections aren't totally based on what coaches did in the past, but it's very conservative as far as adjusting teams up and down the ladder. If teams have a new coach or they dramatically change the personnel, but the only personnel change in which you would really upgrade the pace projection, it would be if they acquire a dynamic playmaking type point guard known for pushing the ball down the floor, and the Hornets don't have that. So if Williams wants to play faster, I look at it for maybe of a long-term goal, but with the team that he has now, especially if Rivers ends up with a significant portion of the playmaking duties, it's going to be hard enough for him to initiate the offense in half-court sets. Do you really want him to dictate the tempo of games? I don't really see that happening.
So we've kind of danced around it. Let's look towards the future. You have another article out there about big threes and what shape different teams are in going forward and how teams project to look in 2016. And the Hornets graded out very well on that one with a big three of Anthony Davis, Gordon, and Ryan Anderson. Based on those big threes, where did they fall exactly? Was it third or second?
I don't actually have those rankings up in front of me, but they were in the top.
They were third. They were 0.1 behind. Basically, the Clippers and Hornets were tied for second, drastically behind Oklahoma City, but ahead of Miami, Minnesota, you know, some other decent big threes.
Right, and if you're talking a decimal point of difference, then it's, you know, it's a dead heat in something like that. First of all, it's absolutely moronic and stupid to try to project teams 4 years out. But that's what I was asked to do, so I did it. But I do think that what it teaches you is you look at teams and what the collection of players they have and who comprises the core, you know, the foundation that you're building off of. What is their current level of talent? What do they project now? And what do players like that tend to do from, you know, now to year two, year three, year four? And the error bars on those kind of projections are huge. But if you're a Hornets fan, how can you not be excited? You're talking about Anthony Davis projecting as being a first-team NBA All-Star, a legit franchise player. That's the first piece every team needs. And then you have Eric Gordon, who I think has a lot of untapped potential. He projects well as he is, even despite the injury problems he had last year, because he's a high volume yet still efficient scorer because of his ability to get to the foul line and create his own shot. It's a rare combination.
All right. So that was it for my questions. Michael, did you have any other ones?
No, I'm good. I'm kind of excited, and I'm more than kind of excited about the future and how this plays out. Again, we just put up all of Brad's articles from this summer. We put up the links on the site for your summer reading. So, you know, hopefully you read them before the podcast. If not, now go back and check them out again. And Brad, when will the preseason projections be out? When will Kevin's preseason projections be out for our listeners to buy?
The second week of October, roughly the start of preseason, we will have Pro Basketball Prospectus 2012-13, which will be available in hard book format and also a PDF, and it renders very well on tablets. That's where I usually read it. That comes out roughly coincides with the start of preseason. And then in conjunction with that, we post a spreadsheet that has Kevin's Shanny projections, which is not just oriented for people just who want to know how their team is going to do, but it's also aimed towards people who play fantasy basketball. And so if that is your kind of thing, that's you don't want to have your draft until you have that in hand.
Actually, that's pretty interesting. I know we kind of tease you by saying we're going to let you go, but we have something coming up on the site where I guess the basis of it, to explain it as quickly as possible, is imagine, you know, the entire league gets thrown into a draft pool. You know, the 30 owners, GMs, whatever, pick the players to build their team from scratch. Now, all salaries are included. So if you pick Kobe Bryant, you're getting him at 2 years, $60 million, versus if you pick Anthony Davis, you got him on his rookie-scale contract for the next 5 years. You know, I won't ask you to list off specifically the players, but since you have worked on both the present and projecting the future, what range would you say that, you know, an NBA GM would start considering taking Anthony Davis at in that scenario?
Oh, wow.
He loves this question. He asks every single guest we have.
I've asked two guests, Captain Exaggerator.
I would consider, if I was an NBA GM, I would consider Anthony Davis one of the 10 most valuable properties in the NBA right now.
Thank you very much. It's Henry Abbott had him behind LaMarcus Aldridge. I'll just put it at that. So glad to have some rationale and sense. Henry Abbott also proposed a new NBA in which we had a basketball rim floating above the ground connected to nothing but magnets. So it was a banner day.
Henry's going to listen to this and never come back.
Oh, he was great, but I'm sorry. LaMarcus Aldridge over Anthony Davis today.
He's a Portland fan. That's why I asked the question. I wanted to put him in the worst, most horrible situation he could be in, where he had to pick against his own guy, and he didn't.
All right. Well, we've taken up a lot of your time. I want to thank you so much for coming on again, and everybody check out you know, the articles. It's good news for Hornets fans after burying our heads and avoiding national media attention. Brad's really done some great articles that really showcase an optimistic future, so check them out if you haven't already. Thanks so much, Brad, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks.